Jennings goes to school. Jennings gains a reputation. It was the first afternoon of the Christmas term, and Mr. Carter was enjoying the peace and stillness so soon to be shattered by the arrival of 67 boys on the school train. He was in the dining hall, pinning up the plan of the boys' places at table, just as the patter of little feet hit the stairs like a cavalry regiment thundering across the plain. "Line up," he said. "Ah, a new boy, eh? And what's your name?"
"Jennings, sir."
"Ah, yes, here you are on the list. J.C.T. Jennings. 10 years, 2 months, right?"
No, sir. Not quite right, sir.
10 years, 2 months, and 3 days last Tuesday, sir."
"We won't worry about that," said Mr. Carter, taking a closer look at the new arrival.
Come here, Venables. This is Jennings, who's got to be shown the ropes." The dormitory was a small one. "You sleep in that bed, Jennings," said Venables, "next to this other new chap. What's your name?"
"Charles Edwin Jeremy Derbyshire,"
gulped a small, fair-haired boy with pale blue eyes. "What on earth's the matter with you, Derbyshire?" asked Temple.
"Nothing,"
said Derbyshire through misty spectacles.
"Well, nothing much, except I don't like this place. It's so different here."
"Oh, I don't know," said Jennings philosophically. "We'll probably get used to it in 3 or 4 years."
"You'll have a lot to get used to," said Venables. "First, you mustn't put your hands in your pockets, unless you're a prefect. You mustn't play conkers in the assembly hall. You mustn't read comics. You mustn't eat tuck before lunch. And you mustn't wear your vest for football."
A bell rang in the distance.
"Wow," said Atkinson. "That's the 5 minutes bell. Come on, let's get washed."
"Here, Jennings! What are you doing in that basin?" Venables thundered indignantly.
"Washing," said Jennings.
"But you can't have that basin first. It's Bod's."
"Who's Bod?"
"Temple, of course," said Venables, as if addressing a lower species. "His initials are C.A.T., so naturally we call him Dog. Except it's a bit of a sweat calling him that, so we call him Dog's Body for short."
"But it isn't short," protested Jennings. "Dog's Body's much longer than Dog."
"Which is why we call him Bod, short for Body. And in any case, new kids aren't allowed to call senior boys by their nicknames until their second term. Nor are they allowed first dibs with the wash basins. Bod bagged that one last term. New kids have to wash last."
"Well, I'm here now," said Jennings.
"That's my basin," Temple said. "Get out, or I'll squeeze this wet sponge down your pyjamas."
Temple was easily the largest boy in the room. Still, Jennings remembered, his father had told him to stick up for himself.
He decided to try it. "Go and chase yourself," he said.
The water was cold and uncomfortable, and Jennings let out a yell which echoed all over the building. Just at that moment, the door opened.
"Who was responsible for that yelling noise?" Mr. Carter asked.
"I was, sir," gulped Jennings.
"Temple squeezed water down the back of my trousers."
"Sneak!" hissed Atkinson and Venables.
"Jennings, you don't quite understand," said Mr. Carter. "I didn't say who made that noise. I asked who was responsible for it. That gives the culprit the chance to own up without laying the victim open to the charge of telling tales. There's a difference, you see."
"Yes, sir," said Jennings.
"Now," said Mr. Carter, "who was responsible for those yells?"
"I was, sir," admitted the defender of tradition.
"Thank you, Temple. We'll go into the merits of the case in the morning. Come and see me after breakfast."
Temple waited long enough for Mr. Carter to reach the end of the passage. Then he whispered,
"You ruinous little sneak, Jennings. You wait. I'll bash you up tomorrow."
"Good old Bod," said Atkinson in the same low tone.
"Do it before tea. That's the best time."
"I say, Jennings," he went on, "Temple won the junior boxing championship last term."
"I don't care," said Jennings,
caring very much.
"And you know what he did one half-holiday? He foxed into town on a bus to Valenti's sweet shop, and he brought back some Brighton Rock in a bag with the shop's name on it to prove he'd been. So, you see, you're taking on a big job when you get on the wrong side of Bod."
Jennings had only the haziest recollection of the events of the following morning, and by lunchtime he had had enough of getting into lines whenever a bell sounded, being asked his name and how old he was, and handed exercise books or football socks. So, after the meal was over, he wandered off by himself. At the far end of the playground, he discovered Derbyshire, all by himself.
"I say, you haven't been crying, have you?"
"No, not really," Derbyshire replied. "I've just been wishing I was at home, and it's made my glasses go all misty."
But streaks of grime down his cheek told their own story.
"I say," said Jennings, as a brilliant thought struck him, "I say, Derbyshire, I've got an idea. Shall we run away?"
"Run away?"
"Yes, go home."
"But supposing we get caught?"
Derbyshire asked anxiously.
Jennings considered. It was, of course, quite a point.
"I know," he said, after deep thought. "Disguises."
"What, beards and false noses and things?"
"Why not?"
said Jennings, as though disguises were an everyday occurrence.
"Then, even if they saw us, we wouldn't be recognised."
"But I haven't got a beard," objected the practical Derbyshire. "And anyway, I'd look silly wearing a beard with school uniform."
"Well, perhaps not beards, then," Jennings conceded. "But I could wear your glasses. That'd be something. And you could..."
What could Derbyshire have?
"You could walk with a limp," Jennings decided in a flash of genius.
For the first time since he had arrived at boarding school, Derbyshire began to enjoy himself, and he practised hobbling around in small circles.
"Come on," said Jennings. "Let's go and find Mr. Carter and ask for our money out of the bank."
"That's rather a lot," observed Mr. Carter, after Jennings had asked to withdraw all their money. "I'm afraid I can't let you have it unless you tell me why."
"Please, sir, how much could we have without telling you what it's for?"
I shouldn't be curious up to about a pound," said Mr. Carter generously.
"Oh, well, if that's all, can we have that then, sir?"
Mr. Carter smiled as the door closed behind the two conspirators. He already had an idea that something was afoot, and decided that he would follow them at a discreet distance.
"Well, I suppose that's that," said Derbyshire, "and I was feeling quite excited about walking with a limp."
"Well, we've got enough money to get to the station on the bus," said the irrepressible Jennings.
"But what about train fares?"
"We'll go by taxi. My father will pay at the other end. Come on, give me your glasses and turn your collar up."
After a while, Jennings stopped.
"This disguise is no good, Derbyshire," he said. "Your glasses are giving me a headache, and we must be nearly at the bus stop by now."
Derbyshire put on his glasses.
"Yes, there it is," he exclaimed, "about 20 yards back. We've walked right past it."
As they neared the bus stop, Jennings suddenly let out a gasp. "Quick, down behind the hedge. Someone's coming."
Mr. Carter strolled slowly out of the school gates towards the bus stop. Portions of small boy were visible through gaps in the hedge, but he pretended not to notice and walked on past the bus stop, disappearing round a bend in the road.
"Good job he didn't see us," Jennings whispered, cautiously raising his head.
In the distance, they heard a bus approaching. It was a single-decker and fairly full, but two seats in the front were vacant. With anxious glances down the road, they hopped aboard. 5 seconds later, the bus slowed down. Jennings raised his eyes cautiously to the level of the window. The sight that met his gaze chilled the blood in his veins. Mr. Carter was standing in the road with one hand upraised to stop the bus. The master took a seat next to the entrance and carefully avoided looking at the front seats. Indeed, they appeared to be empty, for Jennings and Derbyshire were crouching so low that nothing was visible.
"Fares, please," said the conductor, moving down the aisle.
Doubled up as they were, they had difficulty in getting their money out of their trouser pockets.
2 halves to the station," Jennings whispered softly.
"What's the matter, mate? Laryngitis?"
asked the conductor in a voice of thunder.
"Right, 2 to the station," he boomed again. 2 to the station, I thank you."
Several times when the bus stopped, new passengers advanced to the front seat, believing it to be empty, and were startled by the crouching figures who mimed at them to go away.
"Station! Station!" called the conductor. "Hey, Nipper, didn't you want to go to the station? Oi!"
And he whistled at the seemingly empty front seats as he approached them.
"We're going a bit further," murmured Jennings.
"Okay," said the conductor, ringing the bell. "That'll be another 10 pence each."
"Oh, goodness," said Derbyshire, "we haven't got any more money."
"Right," said the conductor. "You'll have to get off then, won't you?"
"Can I be of any help?" inquired Mr. Carter politely. Jennings and Derbyshire were speechless with shock. Mr. Carter gave them a friendly smile as he handed over the extra money. "Would you mind stopping?" he said to the conductor. "I think we've all gone quite far enough." Jennings and Derbyshire stood dejectedly on the pavement as the bus proceeded on its way.
"Will there be an awful row, sir?" inquired Derbyshire at last.
"Gracious, no. We all make mistakes. The best thing to do is to try and profit by them."
"But shan't we be expelled, sir?"
"Why, would you mind very much?"
I'd rather like it, sir," Derbyshire confessed.
"I thought that was the trouble," said Mr. Carter. "We all start off by feeling homesick. It's just one of those things that has to be mastered." Jennings was only mildly impressed by being let off so lightly. His mind had clouded over with the prospect of the bashing up he would now have to face up to. But as he gazed unhappily across the road, his eye was drawn to a sweet shop. Something about it rang a bell. Why should it appear vaguely familiar when he had never seen it before? S. Valenti and Son was inscribed in red letters above it. Suddenly, Jennings remembered, and an idea began to buzz in his brain.
"Venables, you slacker, you haven't washed your feet," said Atkinson.
The dormitory bell had rung 10 minutes before, and Temple, Atkinson, and Venables had reached the gargling stage of getting into bed. They were rather puzzled at the absence of Jennings and Derbyshire.
"I bet they've been hiding from me because they're afraid of getting bashed up," said Temple.
"Good heavens, no," said Jennings, sailing into the dormitory as though he'd just bought the place. "I never gave you a thought. I've had other things to think about. As a matter of fact, Derbyshire and I foxed out. We went into town on a bus." A stunned silence followed this incredible statement. Temple was the first to recover.
"I don't believe you," he said. "I bet you can't prove it."
With a flourish, Jennings produced a bag of rock. "Have a bit of Brighton rock, Bod. I got it at Valenti's. And here we are to tell the tale," said Jennings, wisely leaving much of the tale untold.
"I say, Jennings," said Venables, in between mouthfuls of rock, "look, you can share my basin if you like, you and Derbyshire."
"No, thanks," said Jennings. "I think we'll have Bob's basin."
All right, Jennings," Temple heard himself say.
"And no rot about bashing up, eh, Bod?"
Temple assured him that any mention of bashing up had been in the nature of a friendly joke.
Jennings washed in leisurely fashion and turned again to Temple.
"Oh, Bod," he said. "By the way, you don't mind my calling you Bod, do you, Bod?"
"No, that's all right, Jennings," Temple replied with an effort.
"Good," said Jennings. "Well, I'm feeling a bit fagged out after foxing into town. You might clean out this basin for Derbyshire now I've finished washing, will you?"
This was the crowning humiliation, but Temple's defences were shattered.
"Yes, Jennings," he said.
"Okay, Jennings."
Jennings Goes to School was adapted by Ed Thomason from the book by Anthony Buckridge. The reader was Stephen Fry, and the producer was Anne Hines.